This country's not going to be saved from the top, because that's where all the rot is. It's too deep. It's going to be saved from the grassroots.
Good morning, everybody. Here from the Crossroads, episode number 46. And today, we've got some interesting things to talk about. The Liberal Party in Australia is probably the key one at the moment. It's we've had in the Victorian Parliament, we've had Jess Wilson take over from Brad Batten, who was our original Liberal leader. And she, to all intents and purposes, appears to be a teal candidate, really, which in Australian terms is, I suppose, green and socialist. I don't know that she would appreciate being called that, but looking at her policies, that's what I sort of see, looking at the things that she's been supporting. Now, we've had a bit of a battle with the Liberal Party because in the federal sphere, they've been realising, and a lot of the senators have been realising, that they're not an opposition. And we sort of discussed this last week when we said, is the opposition really an opposition? And they've realised that, you know, they need to come away from the same policies that the Labor Party has been pushing. And that appears to be something that they're pushing for, something that they're endeavouring to create, is policies that better reflect the Australian public rather than the uni party that the two of them have become, Labor and Liberal. So net zero was on the cards to be squashed. The voice or treaty was on the cards to be squashed. And all the other things that basically is makes them, or supposed to make them, different from the Socialist Labor Party, they've been looking at and discussing to some degree. Certainly not to my satisfaction, but to the satisfaction of people who are looking for something different. So we've got the Federal Party looking to back away from net zero. The Federal Party looking to, you know, stay away from treaty. And yet now, in much the same way as happened during COVID, I need to explain this a little bit to tell you how I'm thinking or how I'm seeing this. But during COVID, the Liberal leader at the time, Scott Morrison, allowed the states to do the hard work, allowed the states to implement things which were against our constitution, forcing people to have an experimental vaccination. And he didn't interfere when he had every potential to do so, in my opinion, because, again, you know, forced medical coercion is not part of our constitution. You're not allowed to do it. So in using the states to achieve an aim, we see something here that the Liberal Party now appears to be doing. The Federal Liberal Party is having eternal carry-ons because of the way that many of the senators and a lot of the MPs are saying, well, this is not traditional Liberal. This is not traditional. The traditional way this party was founded. And on the basis of that, they've been trying to change the leadership. They changed to Susan Ley, but of course she's pretty much the same as all the others have been, and she's I guess I'd call her essentially socialist too. She probably wouldn't like that, but that's my opinion. But because the noises are being made in the federal sphere, they look like dumping net zero, it would appear that the movers and shakers of the Liberal Party have decided to use the state Liberal parties to put pressure on the federal Liberal parties. So we have Brad Batten being ousted here in Victoria. It looks like something similar is going to happen in New South Wales. And the people they're proposing to put in, which is a selected person to put in this Victoria's case, is Jess Wilson. Now, she's been chosen to be put in there. She's supposedly won the support of the party. But if we go back a few a little while ago, during the Q Climate Change Election Forum. She promised to legislate 50% reductions in CO2 by 2030, and she committed to net zero. And she also said that gas, and I quote, would cease to be a part of the mix. In other words, they were going to take gas away as well. So all these things that the Liberal Party has been debating in federal sphere and saying, well, you know, we need to get back to being able to produce our own stuff and supply our own cheap energy with the natural abundant resources that we have, would appear to be being upset, the apple cart's being upset by the people that they're putting into Victorian politics. So whilst she hasn't committed what I've just mentioned, the legislation for 50% reductions at this point, she also hasn't denied them. it'll be definitely a watch this space in this regard. And like I said, New South Wales is doing the same thing. So the movers and the shakers out there in the Liberal Party are obviously still trying to push the same agenda as they've been pushing, which is the same virtually as the Australian Labor Party. So we still have the Uni Party, no matter how much overthrow and no matter how much kerfuffle seems to be going on, and oh, they're going to sort themselves out and there'll be a possibility for the next election. I think they're shooting themselves in the foot myself. This whole thing, you know, she was also one who was happy. She supported the voice to parliament, publicly supported the voice to voice treaty to parliament. So with someone like that as a leader, who was essentially, like I said, a teal, there's only one direction, really, if they follow her leadership, that they will end up going. And the pressure will be on to see if they can look at the polls and say anything different. I know there's some sort of talk within Sky News about the polls, and they were saying, well, you can't trust the polls. You know, it's... Of all the people who were supporting them, I'm surprised that Sky News seems to be supporting Jess as well, Jess Wilson as the new leader of the Liberal Parties, because of those things that she's mentioned in the past. So whether they haven't done a deep dive, or again, they're a part of the problem. But I really, yeah, they're sort of saying, well, this, we need this change. It's got to happen. And we think she'll be a good person to do it. Josh Frydenberg, the shadow treasurer, has supported the move. So look, there's different groups and different people from the Liberal Party who are obviously still hell-bent on being in what I see as socialist. They're still trying to do the same thing and still trying to keep the Liberal Party going in the same direction as the Labor Party. Of course, they deny it, but that to me seems to be the way they're heading. So if they can't do things one way, they'll find another way to do things. And I think that's pretty much the way the powers that be work when they try to control a nation. If they've got control of both sides of politics, well, what's purportedly both sides of politics, then they can push us in any direction they want. On another article there, 20 years ago, we're talking politics, which we always are, the potato industry had some serious issues. There were huge frozen potato imports, and they had a tractor rally to Canberra. They went from Tassie across and picked up others on the way. And they protested and they said, look, we can't have all these cheap foreign imports coming in and making our production worthless because we're not being paid enough to actually produce potatoes. We're not meeting costs. And we had some things like labelling laws brought in where you had to show country of origin in the hope that, you know, the consumers would go out and do the right thing and buy Australian made and sort the problem out for us. There was no legislation put in place to stop cheap subsidised stuff put in, as far as I can tell, because here it is 20 years later and it's happening again. Now, Simplot's the main buyer in Tassie. For potatoes, for making chips and things, and they've dropped their prices down considerably for this year. and it's going to be very hard for the potato producers in this country to actually survive. Costs have gone through the roof, as we've noticed. Fuel costs have gone up. Here, see Simplot's there, contract price cut to farmers. And imported frozen fries threaten the future of Tasmanian potato growers. And that's a nice little article to read there to find out what's going on. And it's exactly as it says. It's we've got potatoes coming in through the back door via New Zealand, whose labelling laws are not so good. They can say New Zealand produce when it's not. But just the fact that the costs are going up for our farmers, the cost of water, the cost of power, everything is going up considerably, and it's not being met in the reflection of the price they're being paid for the produce. Even less so because of the subsidised materials that are allowed to come into this country with no blockage. Now, no matter what you say about Donald Trump and his talk of tariffs and everything else, you've got to take a point of view and realise that if another country is subsidising the production of their agricultural produce and then sending it here to be sold, of course it will be cheaper. But what does that do to our food stability, our our independence so that we can actually feed ourselves? If we destroy all our farmers and we destroy all the ability to produce, then we are at the mercy of trade. We're at the mercy of anything that happens overseas. If there's a shipping problem, if we, heaven forbid, enter into another war of some sort where we're blocked or the Suez Canal gets shut down again, we're in that same situation where we won't be feeding ourselves. We'll be looking and struggling to decide what we're going to do. Now, national security has many different parts to it. You've got the supply of energy, you've got supply of food, everything's involved. They used to be called essential services. And if we are undermining all those essential services, such as the potatoes, which is just a reflection of what's happening across the agricultural industry, then, we won't have that essential industry. We will lose it. We've been seeing the price of power go up for the same reasons, because much of it is becoming foreign-owned. It's the money that's being produced from it is going offshore. And we will be renters in our own country if we keep going this way. So I just thought that was an interesting article. We carry on and we go to Canberra and we talk about, we need to stop this thing from happening, and we get paid lip service by our politicians, but nothing binding is ever really enacted. So while we get the chance to have labelling laws so that we can write things on there that are supposedly true and let the public decide, unfortunately, the public's not deciding to buy, and a lot of that pressure comes from the fact that they're under financial pressure and they cannot afford to buy the more expensive Australian product because the imported stuff has been subsidised. So that's part of the financial problem we're seeing here. Another one that is interesting to look at is crypto. And there's a couple of articles on cryptocurrency. I see it as a small part in the financial world, but it's playing its role nonetheless. The markets where everything is trading by being bought and sold affects much of the real world. In some ways, I certainly see it as gambling. But cryptocurrency has crashed from its height of 126,000 down to 90,000, which is nearly a 30% drop. Where it goes from there, who knows? But I ask, is it just a prop up for a sinking financial system? We have issues within the financial world all the time. We have people buying and selling, not doing any real work, not creating anything real. They're virtually just inflating and deflating the prices of companies. Now, of course, they'll all say it's just business, and we're just making a living. But they are, in effect, destroying and manipulating people who are doing real things in the real world, producing real wealth, producing real goods for consumption. And by playing around the edges of that production, by manipulating the finances, it has a severe impact on how well a company can function. So that mentality of just business becomes one of those things that controls a lot of the real world and a lot of the actual true wealth that we can actually access as people. So with crypto jumping around, they're talking at the market, we've got to worry about how the market behaves. I see it as being used to prop up the financial system at the moment. We've got to have a reason to believe in it. And when you think about it, crypto is just a belief. It has no real value of its own. It's just a belief that it's going to have value. And like smoke, it can be blown away, that belief, very easily. It's interesting to watch how the market is behaving at the moment. It's going up and down all over the place. And I don't know where we're going to end up in that regard. But it's keeping everybody on their toes, and it's giving people to talk about, things to talk about. And, those who are trying to hedge their funds or get out of debt or trying to put an investment somewhere are looking frantically for somewhere to put it safe or that's going to make them a lot of money. And the financial system, as it is trying to prop itself up. So we will see how that ends up. In other articles, I think we should touch just briefly on the digital ID that the countries around the world are looking to bring in, and that we're looking to bring in with the underage digital ID for access to the internet. Now that comes in December, and we will see where we go with that. But there's a number of companies already trying to organize how they're going to do that. But of course, it effectively means that everybody must have a digital ID. Why is this a worry? There are many reasons why it's a problem, but amongst that are some recent safety concerns that have come up with it. The Optus, the company Optus, has just had a big safety problem recently. The scammers have got hold of some of the financial records and the bank accounts of some of the Optus clients. Now, Optus, I would have thought, would have had... It's the second time they've had some big issue just recently. I would have thought that they would have had something in place to deal with that, and they'd be up to date fairly well, certainly much more than the government is. But even they can still be scammed and hacked. And then you've got another one that's even more worrying. The Australian Defence Forces are also seeing there's a... their weapons program's been exposed. So the defence industry... cyber attacks have been happening, and they've got access to, I believe it's one of the mobile one of the mobile things they've got access to. It's amongst the defense supply chain contractors that this leak has occurred, and it appears they've been in there. They had what they called a staycation in there, so they were in there for quite a long while. And they've had access to a lot of our information. This, you would imagine, again, the Defence Force and the associated link to it would all be very well protected from scammers. And yet here we are. We have information like this going missing or being accessed. So that's my biggest fear with a digital ID. And while you may say that, I've got nothing to hide, once you go down that route of creating a digital ID and having a digital ID, you end up being subject to all that. You can be accessed by people who know what they're doing. And with the government usually being further behind the industry when it comes to protection from scammers, your likelihood of being scammed is greater again. So identity theft, The things could be done under your name that may fall back upon you, resulting in not just issues for yourself, but potentially for your families, and the time that it takes for you to get out of it, and things you've got to deal with if that goes ahead. It's an interesting thing. So if you start to get into pushing for these digital IDs, these are the things you've really got to think about. How safe are they, and what are the implications? If they have access to your movements, if they have access to your accounts, everything can be accessed. They can know all about you, and whatever that turns into, it depends upon the depravity of the mind that's been accessing the information. So I'd rather stick with proper ID, just paper ID, and have it in my own control, not out there in the digital world for anybody to access if they have the ability to do so. That's just two things amongst the digital ID that I thought was probably relevant, the two scams that have come up just recently. Another one, which is not so much Australian, but it's probably could be linked to Australia, is the promise of releasing the Epstein files has come up again. Now, I don't know what they're doing in the US, but the Parliament there has voted 427-1 to release the Epstein files. Now, which files are they talking about? Heaven alone, who knows? But they're still pushing for it, so I'm just wondering what else they're hiding at the moment. The last release of Epstein files material was nothing that wasn't already known, so that was interesting in its own. But they've gone very quiet on that front, and they haven't said anything for quite some time. Now, they've agreed to pass a bill to release the files. But again, are we going to see what files they are? Are we going to know what files they are? Is it going to be a list of the people who are in there? I did note that Kash Patel, who is the chap in charge of that under Donald Trump, he's the FBI director. Back in 23, when they were out of power, he said that, where are we? I've got this written down somewhere. While out of office in a podcast in 2023, he said, why the Epstein files list has not been released is simple, because of who's on that list. That was his comments. But now, of course, they've been in for this time, and it's simple because it's who's on the list is why they haven't released it, I guess, which obviously is going to affect it. So nothing much has changed there. I do think it's something we can watch, but I think it's more that it's indicative of what's actually going on in politics and how people manipulate things to best suit them. The interests of the public, they all, you know, people want to know, people want to stop these things from happening, people want to know who's corrupt and how we can get rid of them, change things. But at every turn, we are being thwarted, and there's always a reason for it. So they can promise the world when they're not in power. They can make all sorts of promises even when they get in power, but whether they follow up on it and what they follow up on are entirely in their court, because we have no say over it, no matter how much pressure we wish to put on them. I bring that up mostly because, again, if we come back to what's happening in the Liberal Party in Victoria and in New South Wales, the pressure's there. The public is showing what they want, and the federal is responding. And I think if you did a poll in Victoria too, you would see the same thing. The Victorians would be responding because, number one, we voted against treaty in the federal referendum. And yet government here in Victoria seems to think that they have the right to bring it in, despite that, because they have a mandate, because it was one of 82 policies that they put forth in their election, pre-election campaign. So they will do what suits them, even if they understand that the people of country don't want it. And I think the Liberal Party federally has been seeing what the Liberal voters are saying, and they are trying to do some sort of damage control. They are trying to change that. But like the Epstein files, there's certain things that we can't do. There's certain things that we can't change. So we've got to find a way of not addressing it. So we can make all these promises, but when it comes down to it, we can't deal with it. So what people say and what people do, and the what goes on behind the scenes, is sort of critical, because we do find that with these leadership spills, with these changes in people within different parts of the party, we are not getting a reflection of what the Liberal voters are concerned about. We're getting a reflection of what the Liberal Party executive is concerned about. And I think we are seeing regularly what the party executives are concerned about is not what the Australian public is. Yes, it's interesting which way that's going. But we will see what sort of pressure that the states will end up putting on the federal government itself, because I think it's going to be fairly considerable. In climate news, apparently the UN has been telling Australia that digging up our own gas might be a breach of international law. Now, that's an older article, but it comes back with the COP30 meeting in Brazil at the moment. There's quite a bit of material coming out, but a lot of it is just being regurgitating old things. It's a human right to have clean air and water. Therefore, it's a human right to have good weather. And these things are being thought about and talked about and put down in treaty negotiations with the UN. And we see the signing of these treaties on a regular basis, which go back to the Lima Declaration, really, in 1975 or 73, where, the UN thought it was a right of every country to be up to world standards. Therefore, we had to dismantle our industry and give it to the third world to enable them to get up to our standards. Now, encouragement's one thing, but dismantling your own industry is entirely another thing. That's what we've seen, and I think people are actually coming to realise that that's something that's been on a regular basis happening. There's a bit of a talk about whether we were going to host the next COP meeting. Now that the National Liberals are backing away from net zero, I'm talking federal here, I think Anthony Albanese's got cold feet and decided maybe it wouldn't be a good idea if we don't agree with net zero. Whether he's feeling the pinch that he may be losing his seat, and it might be changing to Liberal by the time we actually get to that point where we have a COP, whatever it would be, 31 meeting here in Australia. But it wouldn't look good if this country wasn't adhering to net zero, I guess, if they were coming over here to discuss climate, if we were not falling for their inaccuracies. So, the perception of international law is probably one of those things that is out of the world government scene. And it's another thing that we need to be aware of, another thing that we need to be looking at, because our governments are signing these things, are agreeing to them without our blessing. They seem to think it is, but because it's one of those, 100 whatever policies they put out during election, they seem to think that they have a mandate to do it without asking. And again, it comes back to being we're accepting someone that we're electing on the basis of one or two policies, whereas there's a whole raft of other ones which we probably don't accept. We don't get one choice don't get a choice to make things one at a time. Where are we? Another one. The wisdom of AI. People are more and more relying upon AI for finding out things, for discovering and for understanding things. So you want to know how to do something, you go to your phone and you type it in. There seems to be a large, I think it's an article in The Guardian, a large number of people and companies are using AI to do these things. And the push has been within Silicon Valley to increase the amount of AI being used. It's being touted as being life-saving. It's being touted as being the next best thing. It's infallible. It's all this because it's got access to so much material, which is fabulous in itself to do the research. If you want to go into a library and find specific documents that mention something, then you could do an AI search and it would search all the documents and it will tell you. However, what wisdom does it propound? What does it bring out? How does it help us? I think it can help us by collating data and by giving us access to information, actually summarizing and making a decision for us, which is what a lot of people are starting to use it for, is probably not a very safe thing to be doing. Number one, we're losing the ability to have our own wisdom, to do our own research and to examine what it actually means. But the thing you've really got to realize here with it, of course, is how controllable is it? And much like policy, much like government, how controllable is the population is the key point when you come to discuss these sorts of things, because everything that all the parties seem to be doing at the moment is to further control the population. And that's happening around the world. We are seeing that. I don't think there's any doubt about it. If we then look to AI and say, well, is it going to free us up, which is what they were saying, or is it going to be used for control? If you look at the actual way it is, it's like statistics. If you put garbage in, you'll get garbage out. AI is controlled by what it knows. So what material it's allowed to access, for starters. It's also controlled by the algorithms that it operates under, which is man-made, the algorithms. They're decided. The very program that it runs upon is something that has been created by man. So it's a system that can be used by man. Now, if those people controlling it are the very same people who are putting forth policy within government and manipulating what gets released during an election, or focusing on the things that they think the public will agree with and not on the other things in there that the public probably wouldn't agree with, then it's manipulation. And I see AI as another way of manipulating facts. And I can see the potential for it. I can see the potential of how it could be used well. But the whole question of, are we having a loss of wisdom in ourselves, comes back. It's like a crutch. We start using these things and we don't see the changes that are being made. I'm trying to think how I'm just likening it to lots of the systems that we use as creators of systems. That's what we do. That's who we are as a species. We create things and ways of doing things to help us live in a better place, whether it's how we light a fire or anything else. It's a set of actions that we can take to arrive at an end. And I don't see AI any different. It's just a bit more complicated, a bit more intricate. And the systems of government we put in place as well is just a bit more complicated than your local community meetings. However, it's the control of those systems and the people who run those systems that becomes the danger. And I think we're seeing that in all aspects across all realities in the world. I think we're just seeing that everything we try to do, there's something in place that has a has an influence on us. So it's more crucial now than ever before that we develop our own wisdom. And the article, you know, that was talking in the, that they mentioned the article in the Guardian was, are we losing this wisdom to AI? And I guess it's the easy way out. Same as a lot of things, it's the easy way out. We all opt for the easy way out. But in doing so, we've got to realize that that's probably got us into this situation that we're in at the moment. And we need to be considering how we're going to get out. And one of those ways is to make sure that we study as much different material as we can and look at things to sharpen our minds. Yes, this article here as well, does it pose a threat to critical thinking? And that's really what I'm talking about. It's one thing that is the dulling our minds to it, to actually thinking clearly on a problem. And there's all sorts of ways of doing that. I guess it's the thinking through of policy, which is what it really is. It becomes, you have to look at what the end result of your policy will be if you enact it. And that goes for everything. I don't know that I've got much else really to mention today. I'm on my own again, so I'm not bouncing any ideas off anybody else. But I would point out that this education that you must undertake is an ongoing thing. And whether you listen to podcasts or read original materials, I think it's important that people do start to take an interest in politics. And not in the politics of the mainstream media and not in the politics that the parties would have you talking about, but in community, in what it means to your local community for every policy. And you've got to bring back everything you're being told by your various systems of government, whether they're local, state or federal in Australia. And you have to ask yourself, how does it impact the individual? And that is something that I think we need to start addressing. We need to start going back to the grassroots and deciding how it affects the grassroots of Australia. And there's been far too much bigger picture material being put forward. The bigger picture is made up of thousands of little pictures. And if it's working right in the little pictures, then you can be pretty much assured that it'll be working right in the bigger picture as well. And I think with a little bit of thinking about that statement, if you start to think about that and have a bit of a play around with it, look at what it actually means on all levels. If you're looking after the environment in your own local level and you're doing it properly, then surely that reflection on a larger scale, all those little pictures added up, will mean that everybody will be doing the right thing by their environment. Whether it's farming correctly, whether it's the way you use materials that you buy. If you buy stuff that breaks down and you just throw it away, then you're not looking after the environment. You need to be looking at, well, maybe I should be buying better. I was at a recent meeting of people just recently, and they were talking about that very thing. The chap who passed away, it was a funeral, he only bought what he knew would last. His family was brought up to believe the same sorts of things, and he lived a life that was truly inspiring. He didn't go out of his way for recognition or anything like that, but everything that he did was considered. Everything was for the betterment of those around him. And that's reflected, thankfully, in his family. And I think that that's what we all need to reflect on. If what we are doing in our own lives, in our own small area, is reflective of betterment of the community, then the whole thing will fall together as it should. And we need to learn to reject some of the bigger picture things that are being told to us if they don't work. And many of them are simply there for control. On that note, I ask you to, if you have any questions or any input, you can log on and ask a question or make a comment. You can go to our website at alor.org. We have a huge amount of information that's available there for free to download. If you look at the headings there, you will see a number of things that you can look at. Our social credit library contains the works of C.H. Douglas and his take on the financial system and the problems with it, along with a lot of other material, but it's all related to Douglas' social credit. And there's a wealth of knowledge there for you people to look at. It is incredibly important that this message goes out, because if we do correct problems that we've got, or if we do try to correct the problems that we've got, we need to make sure that the solution we put forward is a proper solution that won't let us down in the long run. And that's how I see that. Other things there are our weekly On Target and our other articles, where we just put in roughly what's going on in the world at the moment with a social credit view upon it, and some of the things that we could be doing. Again, it's just another take on the news. In this case, that's one of my articles there. And you're quite welcome to read and make comment. We also have Veritas books in the background there as well, where you can buy some of the books that are important. And I think last week I mentioned the story of the Commonwealth Bank and how it would be a handy thing to give to every local politician when it comes to, they say there's not enough money to do something, or we're struggling. In Victoria, where they're talking about reducing the speed limits down to 70 kilometres an hour on rural roads because they can't afford to fix the roads, you've got to ask yourself why they can't. And the reason is because Victoria is bankrupt. Why is Victoria bankrupt? Because they borrow from people who want to be paid back, and they use the financial system in the incorrect way. And if you read the story of the Commonwealth Bank, we were capable of doing all these things and funding our own materials as long as we had the ability to do it. As long as it was physically possible, it should be financially possible. And once our governments realize that, then there's no reason why we can't go back to doing that. That, amongst many other books, yeah, please get on there and have a good browse. See what's there, and if there's something, because there's always something for everybody to look at. And as I said, you know, you have to start to educate yourselves. You have to start working out exactly where you fit in this problem, where you fit in this solution, and what you're going to do about it. So the information's there, and I invite you to take your time to have a look. So that's at alor.org. I'm not trying for the hard sell. I'm just getting very frustrated that there's a lot of people out there who have misconceptions, a lot of people out there who think they know something without actually having done any research. And you know, I'm happy for people to have opinions, but it's got to be able to be backed up by fact. And I think, you know, once you start finding those facts, you can present them to other people, it's much easier to make a change. And I think that's what we're all about. So from myself, Neville Archibald, here at the Crossroads, I'd like to sign off and say goodbye for now, and see you next week. Cheers.
This country's not going to be saved from the top, because that's where all the rot is. It's too deep. It's going to be saved from the grassroots.